File 14. The part which the Jews played in the social phenomenon of prostitution, and more especially in the white slave traffic, could be studied here better than in any other Western European city, with the possible exception of certain ports in southern France. Walking by night along the streets of the Leopoldstadt, almost at every turn, whether one wished it or not, one witnessed certain happenings of whose existence the Germans knew nothing until the war made it possible, and indeed inevitable, for the soldiers to see such things on the Eastern Front. A cold shiver ran down my spine when I first ascertained that it was the same kind of cold-blooded, thick-skinned and shameless Jew who showed his consummate skill in conducting that revolting exploitation of the dregs of the big city. Then I became fired with wrath. I had now no more hesitation about bringing the Jewish problem to light in all its details. No, henceforth I was determined to do so. But as I learned to track down the Jew in all the different spheres of cultural and artistic life, and in the various manifestations of this life everywhere, I suddenly came upon him in a position where I had least expected to find him. I now realized that the Jews were the leaders of social democracy. In face of that revelation, the scales fell from my eyes. My long inner struggle was at an end. In my relations with my fellow workmen, I was often astonished to find how easily and often they changed their opinions on the same questions, sometimes within a few days, and sometimes even within the course of a few hours. I found it difficult to understand how men who always had reasonable ideas when they spoke as individuals with one another suddenly lost this reasonableness the moment they acted in the mass. That phenomenon often tempted one almost to despair. I used to dispute with them for hours, and when I succeeded in bringing them to what I considered a reasonable way of thinking, I rejoiced at my success. But next day, I would find that it had all been in vain. It was saddening to think I had to begin it all over again. Like a pendulum in its eternal sway, they would fall back into their absurd opinions. I was able to understand their position fully. They were dissatisfied with their lot and cursed the fate which had hit them so hard. They hated their employers, whom they looked upon as the heartless administrators of their cruel destiny. Often they used abusive language against the public officials, whom they accused of having no sympathy with the situation of the working people. They made public protests against the cost of living and paraded through the streets in defense of their claims. At least all this could be explained on reasonable grounds. But what was impossible to understand was the boundless hatred they expressed against their own fellow citizens, how they disparaged their own nation, mocked at its greatness, reviled its history, and dragged the names of its most illustrious men in the gutter. This hostility towards their own kith and kin, their own native land and home, was as irrational as it was incomprehensible. It was against nature. One could cure that malady temporarily, but only for some days, or at least some weeks. But on meeting those whom one believed to have been converted, one found that they had become as they were before. That malady against nature held them once again in its clutches. I gradually discovered that the social democratic press was predominantly controlled by Jews. But I did not attach special importance to this circumstance, for the same state of affairs existed also in other newspapers. But there was one striking fact in this connection. It was that there was not a single newspaper with which Jews were connected that could be spoken of as national, in the meaning that my education and convictions attached to that word. Making an effort to overcome my natural reluctance, I tried to read articles of this nature published in the Marxist press, but in doing so, my aversion increased all the more. And then I set about learning something of the people who wrote and published this mischievous stuff. From the publisher downwards, all of them were Jews. I recall to mind the names of the public leaders of Marxism, and then I realized that most of them belonged to the chosen race. The social democratic representatives in the imperial cabinet, as well as the secretaries of the trade unions and the street agitators. Everywhere the same sinister picture presented itself. I shall never forget the row of names. Austerlitz, David, Adler, Ellenbogen, and others. One fact became quite evident to me. It was that this alien race held in its hands the leadership of that social democratic party with whose minor representatives I had been disputing for months past. I was happy at last to know for certain that the Jew is not a German. Thus, I finally discovered who were the evil spirits leading our people astray. The sojourn in Vienna for 1 year had proved long enough to convince me that no worker is so rooted in his preconceived notions that he will not surrender them in face of better and clearer arguments and explanations. Gradually, I became an expert in the doctrine of the Marxists and used this knowledge as an instrument to drive home my own firm convictions. I was successful in nearly every case. The great masses can be rescued, but a lot of time and a large share of human patience must be devoted to such work. But a Jew can never be rescued from his fixed notions. It was then simple enough to attempt to show them the absurdity of their teaching. Within my small circles, I talked to them until my throat ached and my voice grew hoarse. I believed that I could finally convince them of the danger inherent in the Marxist follies. But I only achieved the contrary result. It seemed to me that immediately the disastrous effects of the Marxist theory and its application in practice became evident, the stronger became their obstinacy. The more I debated with them, the more familiar I became with their argumentative tactics. At the outset, they counted upon the stupidity of their opponents, but when they got so entangled that they could not find a way out, they played the trick of acting as innocent simpletons. Should they fail, in spite of their tricks of logic, they acted as if they could not understand the counter-arguments and bolted away to another field of discussion. They would lay an essentially different nature from the original theme. They would lay down truisms and platitudes, and if you accepted these, then they were applied to other problems and matters of an essentially different nature from the original theme. If you faced them with this point, they would escape again, and you could not bring them to make any precise statement. Whenever one tried to get a firm grip on any of these apostles, one's hand grasped only jelly and slime, which slipped through the fingers and combined again into a solid mass a moment afterwards. If your adversary felt forced to give in to your argument on account of the observers present, and if you then thought that at last you had gained ground, a surprise was in store for you on the following day. The Jew would be utterly oblivious to what had happened the day before, and he would start once again by repeating his former absurdities as if nothing had happened. Should you become indignant and remind him of yesterday's defeat, he pretended astonishment and could not remember anything except that on the previous day he had proved that his statements were correct. Sometimes I was dumbfounded. I do not know what amazed me the more, the abundance of their verbiage or the artful way in which they dressed up their falsehoods. I gradually came to hate them. Yet all this had its good side, because the more I came to know the individual leaders, or at least the propagandists of social democracy, my love for my own people increased correspondingly. Considering the satanic skill with which these evil counselors displayed, how could their unfortunate victims be blamed? Indeed, I found it extremely difficult myself to be a match for the dialectical perfidy of that race. How futile it was to try to win over such people with argument, seeing that their very mouths distorted the truth, disowning the very words they had just used, and adopting them again a few minutes afterwards to serve their own ends in the argument. No, the more I came to know the Jew, the easier it was to excuse the workers. In my opinion, the most culpable were not to be found among the workers, but rather among those who did not think it worthwhile to take the trouble to sympathize with their own kinsfolk and give to the hard-working son of the national family what was his by the iron logic of justice, while at the same time placing the seducer and corrupter against the wall. Urged by my own daily experiences, I now began to investigate more thoroughly the sources of the Marxist teaching itself. Its effects were well known to me in detail. As a result of careful observation, its daily progress had become obvious to me. And one needed only a little imagination in order to be able to forecast the consequences which must result from it. The only question now was, did the founders foresee the effects of their work in the form which those effects have shown themselves today, or were the founders themselves the victim of an error? To my mind, both alternatives were possible. If the second question must be answered in the affirmative, then it was the duty of every thinking person to oppose this sinister movement with a view to preventing it from producing its worst results. But if the first question must be answered in the affirmative, then it must be admitted that the original authors of this evil, which has infected the nations, were devils incarnate. For only in the brain of a monster, and not that of a man, could the plan of this organization take shape, whose workings must finally bring about the collapse of human civilization and turn the world into a desert waste. Such being the case, the only alternative left was to fight, and in that fight to employ all the weapons which the human spirit and intellect and will could furnish, leaving it to fate to decide in whose favor the balance should fall. And so I began to gather information about the authors of this teaching, with a view to studying the principles of the movement. The fact that I attained my object sooner than I could have anticipated was due to the deeper insight into the Jewish question which I then gained, my knowledge of this question being hitherto rather superficial. This newly acquired knowledge alone enabled me to make a practical comparison between the real content and the theoretical pretentiousness of the teaching laid down by the apostolic founders of social democracy, because I now understood the language of the Jew. I realized that the Jew uses language for the purpose of dissimulating his thought, or at least veiling it, so that his real aim cannot be discovered by what he says, but rather by reading between the lines. This knowledge was the occasion of the greatest inner revolution that I had yet experienced. From being a soft-headed cosmopolitan, I became an out-and-out anti-Semitic. Only on one further occasion, and that for the last time, did I give way to a pressing thought which caused me some moments of profound anxiety. As I critically reviewed the activities of the Jewish people throughout long periods of history, I became anxious and asked myself whether, for some inscrutable reasons beyond the comprehensions of poor mortals such as ourselves, destiny may not have irrevocably decreed that the final victory must go to this small nation. May it not be that the people which has lived only for the earth has been promised the earth as a recompense? Is our right to struggle for our own self-preservation based on reality? Or is it a merely subjective thing? Fate answered the question for me, inasmuch as it led me to make a detached and exhaustive inquiry into the Marxist teaching and the activities of the Jewish people in connection with it. The Jewish doctrine of Marxism repudiates the aristocratic principle of nature and substitutes for it the eternal privilege of force and energy, numerical mass, and its dead weight. Thus, it denies the individual worth of the human personality, impugns the teaching that nationhood and race have a primary significance, and by doing this, it takes away the very foundations of human existence and human civilization. If the Marxist teaching were to be accepted as the foundation of the life of the universe, it would lead to the disappearance of all order that is conceivable to the human mind, and thus the adoption of such a law would provoke chaos in the structure of the greatest organism that we know, with the result that the inhabitants of this earthly planet would finally disappear. Should the Jew, with the aid of his Marxist creed, triumph over the people of this world, his crown will be the funeral wreath of mankind, and this planet will once again follow its orbit through the ether, without any human life on its surface, as it did millions of years ago. And so, I believe today that my conduct is in accordance with the will of the Almighty Creator. In standing guard against the Jew, I am defending the handiwork of the Lord.